Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Lizzie from Solution on the Shore Group in New Jersey.
Hi, everyone. I'm Liz. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is September 16th, 2010, and often not grateful enough. I have a home group. It's Solution on the Shore in Neptune, New Jersey. It's on Saturday nights, and it's at 8 o'clock. If you're ever in the area, you should come check it out. We're pretty much the best home group in the entire world. It's always an honor and a privilege to speak for AA and to be asked to speak for AA. So, you know, I'm going to thank Sarah for asking me to come out and speak, even though she couldn't be here. I guess I'll just start at the beginning. I mean, where else would I start? I was born in a really, you know, loving household. You know, we're all alcoholics. Both my parents are alcoholics. My brother's an alcoholic. And from a really young age, I had a really weird relationship with alcohol. Because I remember, like, my dad telling me, like, as young as, like, 7 years old, he'd be like, you're never going to be able to drink successfully. And I had no idea what he was talking about. My dad had been sober. My dad's been sober for, like, 20 years now. And my mother eventually passed away from this disease. So, you know, I remember watching alcohol absolutely tear my family apart. You know, my brother is 7 years older than me, and I absolutely looked up to him with everything I had. Like, he was like my idol. I wanted to be just like him. And, you know, there came a time he was, like, in and out of rehab, homeless for weeks at a time, and, like, I absolutely hated everything about alcohol. I hated what it did to my family. My mother passed away when I was 8 from this disease because she had relapsed. She was in the program for a long time. And, you know, I never understood, you know, why someone could do that to their family. Like, I would look at my mom and I had so much anger towards her. So I'd be like, you know, like, you had kids. Like, how could you do that? You know, this is stuff that I would be thinking later on. You know, and now, looking back, I realize, like, you know, absolutely no human power could have relieved me of my alcoholism. Anyway, you know, I was always kind of like a weird kid, a little strange. I remember, like, as young as, like, third grade, I was, like, telling my teacher that I was, like, hearing voices and stuff, which, like, isn't a good idea to tell a teacher because, like, they send you to, like, doctors and stuff and, like, I just honestly thought I was crazy. I absolutely loved attention, you know. And I had this mind that was, like, constantly going, like, and thinking about me and, like, you know, what are others thinking about me? How do I get everyone to like me? And if you don't like me, how do I get you to really hate me? As long as you're thinking about me, you know. You know, I always strive to be, like, the best at absolutely everything. And if I wasn't going to be the best at it, I was going to be the absolute worst. So people would be, like, paying attention to me. You know, and as I grew up, I remember just feeling increasingly uncomfortable and, you know, miserable in my skin all of the time. You know, when my brother was going in and out of rehabs and, like, my mom passed away, like, you know, and this is not an excuse. Like, none of these things make me an alcoholic. This is just my story. You know, I wanted to run away. And I would do absolutely anything to run away, you know. So the first time I drank, I was 12 years old. And I remember, you know, I was just hanging out with a couple of friends, and I was watching Family Guy. And the episode where, like, they legalized pot was on. And I was like, wow, this looks like a really good idea. Like, why don't we, like, go buy some weed and I can try this for the first time. And, yeah, so that's what we did. And then, you know, I proceeded to drink, like, that same night. We used to call it getting scrambled. And that feeling, you know, it was like finally, this is something that works for me. Because I remember, like, by that time, I had already been going to therapists. I was already, you know, in and out of the guidance office. Like, I would go to the nurse's office every day. I was in, like, 6th and 7th grade. I'd be going to the nurse's office every day being like, oh, my God, I have so much anxiety. Like, can I just go home? You know, I have social anxiety and all this stuff. And it was like, finally, like, this works. And I couldn't understand how this could have been such a bad deal for my brother and for my mom. You know, I was like, this makes me awesome, you know? Like, I'm really nice to everybody, and, like, you know, I don't care what any of you think, you know? More so, I'm, like, better than all of you, you know? So I ran with that for a while. And the obsession, it started right away. It wasn't something that, like, grew over time. Like, the first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting I went to was when I was 14 years old. You know, like, this thing took hold of me quick. It wasn't like, you know, over time, like, through progression, you know, slow progression. Like, no, like, I was getting eaten alive by this disease by the time I was 14. You know, and I remember, like, I would come home and I would look at my dad's face and he would look at me with tears in his eyes, like, what happened to his little girl. And I didn't care. I had absolutely no more feelings left in me. You know, I had so much hatred and anger towards him. Like, why weren't you around when I was growing up? You know, when my mom passed away, my dad had, like, he was working all the time. I was pretty much on my own. I took care of myself, like, at 12 years old. Like, I cooked myself dinner. I stayed out as late as I wanted to. I was still going to school, but, like, I would sleep in till, like, 9 o'clock and then go to school, walk to school whenever I wanted to. Like, there weren't that many rules. And for a long time, I blamed my dad for that. And I looked at my dad like, you know, anybody would turn out like me if they had a father like that. Meanwhile, something that I got to look at later on is, like, you know, my dad's providing for 5 kids. You know, he has to work 7 days a week. He comes home after a long day of work. Like, you know, these are things that I see now. So throughout my drinking and everything, you know, drinking wasn't the only thing, you know. I have so much respect for Alcoholics Anonymous that I'm not going to get into any of the other stuff, but the truth is that I would do absolutely anything to get out of myself. And a big thing was cutting for me. Like, I would cut myself because, you know, that really did much good. But the point is, you know, the first time I really faced any real consequences is I was in school, and they broke into my locker, and they found, like, a bunch of razor blades, and that's not something you should have in your locker in 8th grade or at all. And I was like, what? That's, like, normal, right? But I went to the guidance office, and, like, they sent me home, and they sent a bunch of people to my house to, like, evaluate me. And, you know, I was sitting there, like, 13, 14 years old, and, like, these people are looking at me, and they're, like, asking me all these questions, like, you know, do you ever think about killing yourself? And I'm like, well, yeah, doesn't everybody? And they, like, ask me if I drink, and I'm like, yeah. And they're like, well, what do you drink? And I'm like, well, what don't I drink? Like, that's a pretty broad question, don't you think? But, of course, they didn't say that. I was like, I drink vodka sometimes. And they didn't even like that answer. They told my dad, and my dad wasn't very happy with me, not that he didn't know already. And they're like, all right, well, if you cut yourself one more time, you're going to the hospital. I'm like, okay. So I went upstairs, and I cut myself because, you know, I want to get away. That's my goal, is I want to get away from here. I want to get away from you because I have no idea how to live. So I get to this hospital, and I absolutely love it there. It's great. Like, I could And I remember, like, honestly thinking at this time, like, I walked into this hospital and I spent a couple days there and I made a couple friends, like, hospital buddies, like, exchanging numbers with the guys. Like, this is great. And I remember thinking thoughts like, I could spend the rest of my life in a place like this and be absolutely okay. And that's, like, not normal. That's really not okay. Because I had people telling me what to do always. I had a schedule. They had, you know, we're going to do arts and crafts here. We're going to talk about our feelings here, you know. Here are all your meals. Like, and that's perfect for a person like me because, you know, with real life and, like, situations and decisions I have to make, I'm absolutely incapable because I have so much fear. I have this fear inside of me that absolutely drives me in every decision I make, every conversation I have. It's all fear-driven. So, unfortunately, I had to leave the hospital eventually. And I got out, and they put me in an outpatient program. And they were like, yeah, we're going to drug test you. And I was like, that's really not cool. But so I was getting drug tested once a week. And so I was like, all right, even more of a reason to drink more. And that's what I did. And I didn't take anything seriously. And I was, like, throwing chairs and kicking holes in walls. And, like, this is at 14 years old. And I would come home and look at my dad, and he would just look at me with tears in his eyes. And, you know, I love my father so much because he never spared me any pain. Never. My dad let me do all the things that I did. And he watched. And how painful that must be. You know, I don't have any kids. I'm 17. I don't have any kids. But I can't even imagine that kind of pain, looking at your child like that. And I have so much respect for someone who's able to let me go down my own path and let me make those mistakes. You know, I can't thank him enough for that. You know, so I'm in this outpatient program, and I'm absolutely dying. Nothing's working. They're putting me on all these medications, and I'm drinking constantly because I felt like there was absolutely no hope. There's absolutely no hope in this world. You know, I'm not the alcoholic that lost a house or got a couple DWIs. Like, I was 14 years old. I'm not the kind of alcoholic that, you know, lost their entire family. Like, they were there for me the entire time. But I'm the kind of alcoholic that lost absolutely all hope and wanted to die, like, every second of the day. I'm the kind of alcoholic, like, I look at myself in the mirror and I absolutely can't stand the person that I'm looking at. And that's really where my bottom is. You know, that feeling, like, I remember going to bed every single night and hoping that I wasn't going to wake up the next morning. And, like, praying, like, God, please, like, please don't let me wake up. And, you know, the whole God thing, where I was with that is, like, I've always had a belief in God, always. Like, when I was little, I remember, like, I was reading, like, these children's Bibles. Like, I told you, I was a weird kid. But, like, I would read children's Bibles at night. And, like, I've always had a connection with a higher power. But as I was getting into my drinking and, you know, really skyrocketing in my alcoholism, like, my belief in God turned into, like, God hates me. I absolutely believe that God hated me and that God didn't want me to be happy. And, like, maybe that worked for everybody else, but if God really loved me and wanted the best for me, then he wouldn't have killed my mom and, you know, my parents wouldn't have got a divorce. I would have all these friends and, like, I would be super happy all the time. And that's honestly how I thought. You know, so eventually I get out of this outpatient program and, like, nothing sunk in. And I was absolutely dying again. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't have enough guts to try and kill myself. So I just started cutting really bad all over again, you know, drinking all the time, getting absolutely just belligerent, and I get sent to the hospital again. And I'm like, yes. Like, this is what I want. Like, can you just put me here forever? And, you know, they sent me out of there again, and they were like, you're not going to an outpatient program. You're going to Alcoholics Anonymous. And my dad took me to my first AA meeting. And I walked in, and I was the only 14-year-old in that room. I can tell you that much. And I felt absolutely out of place. And I was like, this is ridiculous. How can I be an alcoholic? I'm 14 years old. Like, this is stupid. And I remember, like, that night, I asked my dad, I was like, do you think I'm an alcoholic? And he looked at me and he was like, you know, you're not really supposed to tell someone they're an alcoholic, but I'll make an exception with you. So I started going to AA, and I wasn't feeling it. I remember, like, I went to my second meeting, and, like, they went around and introduced themselves, and I was like, hi, I'm Liz. And no one said hi to me. And I was like, I'm done. They all hate me. They think I'm too young to be here. Like, here's my mind already. I'm like, I'm out of here. I'm getting wasted tonight. These people don't even know what they're missing. And that didn't happen. I was hanging around these rooms, and people were coming up to me, and they were like, oh my God, like, you're so lucky. This is so beautiful. Like, you're 14 years old, and you're getting sober. Like, this is, wow, you have your whole life ahead of you. You're so lucky. I wish I got it when I was your age. And I absolutely wanted to kill them all. Like, I hated all of these people. Because I was looking these people in the face, and I was thinking, like, I was not spared any pain. I was not spared any pain, you know? And I was looking at these people thinking, like, you had an extra 40 years of drinking. Like, don't tell me that I am lucky. Like, I got shortchanged, you know? And somebody came up to me after the meeting, and he's, like, 22. And he's like, you know, I bet you probably hate all those people that are telling you you're lucky, but if you stay around long enough, you're going to understand what they mean. And I find that to be absolutely true today. That person didn't stay sober, but, you know, whatever. So, I was lucky enough in AA, like, I was holding on to these chairs with everything that I had, you know. I didn't have a sponsor, I wasn't working the steps, I didn't even know what the big book was, to be honest with you. And I absolutely wanted to die, you know. And people kept saying, like, keep coming, kid, it'll get better, like, you know, just keep going to meetings and don't drink. And I was like, well, it's not working for me. I'm not a problem drinker, I'm a solution drinker. I drink because that's the only thing that works for an alcoholic like me. And when you take away that solution, I get worse. I was wildly violent in my first couple months of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, it didn't really get me anywhere. Look at me. I'm like 5 foot, 100 pounds. Like, I didn't do much damage. But I was absolutely crazy. I can promise you that. But I was at this meeting one night, and my sponsor came in. My sponsor at the time, would-be sponsor, wasn't my sponsor yet. You know what I mean. She came in and she told her story, and she was 19 years old at the time, and that was, like, the youngest person I had seen. I'm still 14. My mom, my stepmom, who's in AA as well, came up to me, and she was like, you should get her number. You should talk to that girl. And that's what I did, which is, like, really weird, you know. That's definitely God doing for me what I cannot do for myself, because I'm not the type of person who's going to call you and be like, hey, how's it going, and have a fake conversation and pretend that I actually care. Like, I'm not that kind of person. But that day, you know, I was in enough pain that I was willing to do it. And I gave this girl a call, and she picked me up the next day and made fun of me a little bit for being so young. And she took me under her wing, and I got involved in this big group of young people. And when I say young, like, they're like 20 to 30-year-old dudes. And I'm like 14 years old running around with them, like, yeah, this is a good time, like, going to different states all the time. It's really crazy that I'm up here speaking because, like, you know, I remember coming to this meeting 3-4 years ago with this group of people and just sitting there smoking, chain smoking my cigarettes, thinking, like, wow, I'm never going to be up there, you know, a couple months in sobriety, and, like, here I am 3 years later. I started getting really fueled about AA and about the steps and about the big book. Mind you, I really know nothing. You know, my sponsor had, like, you know, briefly taken me through the steps, like, skip paragraphs, like, here, 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 you know, like, just the gist of things. And I talked to her recently, the girl who used to be my sponsor. She actually made an amends to me, which was crazy because usually I'm the one making amends. But she said that we wanted it bad enough that that was enough at the time. And I believe that to be absolutely true. And I'm so grateful for that experience because that's exactly what I needed at the time. You know, but I started becoming, like, you know, Miss AA. Like, I know what I'm doing, and none of you know what you're doing. I would go to meetings everywhere, and I'd be like, you know, work the steps or die, and, like, you know, really fired up about this thing. And it was a really great time, but, you know, I definitely paid the price later on for that. You know, a couple months in, I had met another 14-year-old in the rooms who had a couple months, and I was like, this is a really good idea. Let's get together. And, you know, any working knowledge of a God that I was, any relationship with a God that I was, you know, strengthening, that was like out the window. And I was absolutely running on self-will. And, you know, and I paid the price. I walked out of that absolutely crippled and wanting to die again and wondering, like, how did I get here? How did this happen again? And, you know, I spoke in, like, Manhattan that weekend, and on that Monday, I went back to school, and I met with a bunch of kids that were doing the stuff that I wanted to do, and I had relapsed. And I called my mom to pick me up, and she rolled up, and I walked into her car. And she asked me what was going on, and I just looked at her, and I said, cunning, baffling, and powerful, and I just started crying. And you know, I went to a meeting that night, and I was absolutely willing to do absolutely anything, because I never wanted to feel that way again. And I had had a taste of AA, you know. I knew what it meant not to feel like that again. I knew what it meant to be filled with hope. And I remember I was sitting in the church with my sponsor next to me, and I just started bawling my eyes out because I had no hope, and I had gotten to this place again. And she took me outside, and we sat on church steps, and she was like, you know, you need to make a choice right now. God is everything or God is nothing. You know, those are your only options. You're either going to, you know, happy, joyous, and free, you know, walk this path, spiritual growth, you know, or you're going to die an alcoholic death. Those are your options. Make your choice. And, you know, I chose to follow the spiritual path. And I believe that, like, that day absolutely changed my entire life. September 16th, 2010 is my sobriety date. And I'm growing up in AA. I'm 17 years old, and it's crazy. Like, it's absolutely insane. Like, just, I'm still in high school. I'm I'm going to be a senior this year. And, you know, the things that I used to be afraid of, like, I always had so much fear when it came to, like, you know, people and what everyone thought of me and, like, you know, like, silly stuff like that. And now I'm, like, realizing, like, I recently did a fear inventory, and, like, I really looked at, like, the things that really I fear today, and I fear things like, you know, not getting into college, like, not going to the places that I want to go in my life, and that in itself is a miracle, you know? To go from, like, being perfectly okay with living in hospitals for the rest of my life to, like, actually looking into colleges and looking into my future, it's like I didn't think that was possible for an alcoholic like me. To have a relationship with, like, my father and, like, people in my life. I remember when I was making amends, like, one of the first amends I had to make was to my mother who had passed away, and I didn't know what to do. Like, I was, you know, crippled with fear. I was so confused about it, and I talked to my sponsor, and, you know, she hadn't lost her mother. She didn't really have experience with that, so she just, you know, said her go-to thing, like, ask God. You know, when in doubt, just ask God, and if you seek him, like, the answer will come. And I find that to be absolutely true. So eventually, you know, after praying about it, I wrote out this entire letter to my mother. And I went outside. And at the time, I'm, like, living in Brielle on the river. Like, my life is really hard, right? and I go outside and I read this letter. And afterwards, I burned it. And I remember, like, a feeling, like, weight lifted off my shoulders. And, like, I really made things right, you know? Experiences like that in Alcoholics Anonymous is what I've come to discover. And, like, I keep figuring out, like, the longer I stay sober, the more I realize, like, I don't know anything. Like, I really don't. You know, for a while, I had, like, just started sponsoring people, you know? And it's not like I haven't been trying. Since I was 14 years old, I have been trying to sponsor people. But not that many people take a 14-year-old seriously, especially when you're, like, 40 years old, you know? They're not looking for a 14-year-old to be like, this is what you should do. You know what I mean? But I recently just started sponsoring this girl. And I had sponsored girls in the past and taken girls through the steps. And I find that that's absolutely where I get my peace today. You know, I had recently, like, gone through a breakup, like, boo-hoo, right? But, like, I was actually, like, kind of upset about it. And then this girl that I'm sponsoring calls me, and she's like an absolute mess. And I'm like, oh, God, you know, what a doozy. And I go to her house, and I open up this book, and I find that, like, anything that's going on in my life has absolutely, it doesn't even matter anymore, you know? Those are the kind of miracles I find. And I remember, like, sitting and listening to people speak from a podium about that, like, the light coming on in somebody's eyes, and you know, and that really didn't hold that much depth and weight until I actually felt it and saw it with my own eyes. I don't even know where to go. Everyone in my family is pretty much in AA. Both my parents are in AA, and my brother, you know, so I don't really get away with anything. You know, anytime I start acting out or being crazy, they're like, go talk to your sponsor, you're ridiculous. You know, my life today, I really wouldn't exchange it for anything. I'm having an opportunity to grow up in AA, and that's absolutely incredible. You know, like, I look at the people who told me that I was so lucky and, like, you know, how much pain I was spared, you know, and I really do see where they're coming from now. Like, right now I'm really starting to understand it. And I wouldn't give that up for the world. So thanks for letting me share. I'm going to bring up my sponsor, Marielle, to finish out the hour.
Hey, guys. I'm Marielle Harrison. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Leslie, so much for speaking. And thanks for having us. I spoke at an act of recovery here a couple years ago, so I'm familiar with my sponsor. My old sponsor is a member of your home group, so I have kind of like a dear place in my heart for this meeting. I have a sobriety date. It's May 7th, 2007. I have a sponsor. Her name's Candace, and she has a sponsor. His name's Clancy, and I sponsor other women. I'm really grateful to be sober, you know. I'm not really going to share with you too much about, like, my drinking or what it was like, because, well, I only have a couple minutes. But I'm more kind of just going to share with you about, like, how my alcoholism can be active, you know, 6 years sober. I moved from, I got sober in Florida, and I lived in Florida for about 6 years, and, the gifts and the blessings that come from, you know, being sober and living, being an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous is, like, I get to grow up, you know, but I get to, like, figure out who the hell I am, you know? When I got to AA, I didn't know what color I liked. I didn't know, you know, what music I liked. I didn't, like, know what clothes I liked to wear. You know, I liked what you liked. You know, if you listen to rap, I listen to rap. You know, if your favorite color was green, my favorite color was green. And, you know, as I stayed sober, I got to, like, figure out what I liked and that, like, it was okay to stand up for what I wanted and stand up for what I believed in. And if you didn't believe in it, that was okay. You know, I, too, went through, like, a very aggressive period in Alcoholics Anonymous where I, you know, everyone was doing AA wrong. I was the only one who knew what I was doing. There was no good women in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and thank God for good sponsorship, which reminded me that, like, on May 6th, 2007, like, AA was doing just fine, you know. I was homeless on May 6th, 2007, you know. So where I'm going with that, though, is that, like, by being in AA, like, I got to do all this stuff that I never thought, not even that I never thought I could, that I never even thought I wanted to, you know. Like, I found out that, like, I love yoga, you know, and I ended up having the opportunity to become a certified yoga teacher, you know, and follow through from start to finish, you know, like, not, like, figure out, like, oh, this is cool and fun and interesting, and then, like, 2 weeks, like, drop out, you know, like, because I'm a really good starter. I'm not such a great finisher, you know, and what AA has taught me is that I follow through, you know, and so what ended up happening is at about 5 years sober, I left Florida to move and live in an ashram in New York. And what an ashram is, for people who have no idea, is it's a spiritual yoga community. And taking these leaps of faith are not something that's ingrained in my nature. I'm full of fear. I'm completely fear-based. And the easy way out is sounds really good to me, you know? But again, what I've been taught is that, like, God is everything or he's nothing. And that when I listen to my heart, my sponsor now says, what is the truth, Marielle, in your womb? You know, like, when I listen to what's going on inside, like, that silent, still voice, like, that is God, you know? And I have an opportunity and a decision to make about whether or not I'm going to trust that. And things are made very clear for me. One of my staple prayers is, like, God, please make it very obvious, because otherwise I'm not going to get it. You know, Tom Flynn taught me that. And so I went to New York, and I had the most amazing experience of my life. You know, I was waking up at 4 a.m. and, like, you know, in lotus position, meditating for 2 hours, and, like, learning about an 11th step in totally, totally different ways. You know, but what ended up happening is I ended up, I started to miss you guys, you know, and I didn't even realize that that's what was going on. You know, I just started to not feel okay. And I was absolutely walking a spiritual path. You know, I was absolutely seeking God, and I was absolutely all about love and service to the best of, you know, my ability. And what happened is I just started to not feel okay, you know, and I'm lucky that over the last 6 years I've been able to miraculously maintain friendships. And so I had some good people in Alcoholics Anonymous that invited me to come stay with them. And the plan was only to come to Jersey for a couple weeks, you know. And I've been there 6 months now. And what happened is I got, like, reintroduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. Not to spiritual principles, because those have become ingrained in my heart, you know. But I got reintroduced to, like, you guys. And you guys are my people, you know. And I began to get excited in a way that I hadn't been excited in a little while. And I absolutely wouldn't trade that experience for anything. You know, I believe we get sober to follow our hearts and to follow our dreams and to go anywhere and do anything, you know. But I belong here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll tell you, though, coming back to you guys has been really frickin' difficult, you know. You know, there's part of me that's arrogant and feels like a big shot and is like, I know everything about AA. And there's part of me that is terrified, you know, like feeling like a newcomer in Alcoholics Anonymous, going to a new area, not knowing anybody, not having like a gaggle of sponsees, you know, that are always around me. It's been very uncomfortable. You know, like sometimes I'll pull up to an AA meeting and I'll be like, oh, AA. You know? And that's not the way I feel in my heart. Like, that's not my truth. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. But fear absolutely cripples me and absolutely paralyzes me. And when I make decisions based on fear, though, I end up in a lot of pain. And so luckily what I've been taught in Alcoholics Anonymous is that I just move my fucking feet. Excuse me. I just move my feet, you know, because, like, my head is all the way in, like, Fiji. But, like, my feet are right here at a meeting, you know. My feet are right there sitting with a sponsee reading the big book, you know. My feet, and eventually my head will follow my feet, you know, because it has to, you know. But so, like, I'm so grateful for the training I've had, you know, the training that I've had that I move my feet no matter what, you know. And what I'll finish with is that, like, and I always share some sort of this from the podium because when I got to AA, I thought I had to be perfect. You know, I thought I was getting sober and that in order to be a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous, like, I was going to get perfect. And what happened is I ended up in a lot of pain as a result of that old idea. You know, it talks in the big book about living this double life, you know, when we're drinking. You know, the act I put on for you, the reputation I so think that I want and need, and then what's really going on with my character. And my experience is that's not just when I'm drinking. I live a double life absolutely sober because I'm so freaking terrified of what you guys think about me. You know, I think I can't be a good sponsor. I think I can't be a good friend. I think I can't be a good speaker at the podium if I tell you my truth. I'm too crazy. I'm too sick. I'm too, you know, screwed up, you know. And what I found is that that's my alcoholism, you know. And I believe I have a living, breathing, intelligent disease. You know, and my alcoholism knows that if it came at me and was like, oh, you know, a gin and tonic sounds really good, I'd be like, that's stupid. You know, my alcoholism knows that that's not what's going to work with me. What my alcoholism does know is that what will work is my alcoholism will separate me from you. You know, it'll lie to me and it'll tell me that you won't understand, that I'm not good enough, that you're going to judge me and that matters. You know, and it's not the truth. My alcoholism will get me far enough away from you that then it will say a gin and tonic sounds like a good idea, and I'll buy it. You know? So what I've learned, Bill Wilson says, you know, as brothers in Alcoholics Anonymous, we are not attracted to each other through our perfections. We are attracted to each other through our imperfections. And I have found that to be absolutely true. I have found that when I get honest in Alcoholics Anonymous, not only do I feel a part of and comfortable in my own skin, I am able to relate to people on a way that's real. you know? So whether it's the fact that I was in an abusive relationship for 4 years while I was sober, or the fact that I dated a newcomer, or the fact that I stole from the Seventh Tradition when I was the treasurer of a home group, you know, those are the things I was terrified to tell you guys about, you know? And what I find out is, and I don't recommend doing any of that, but what I find out is that's the stuff that allows me to get free, being honest about that, you know, and relating to you in a way that, like, I am not better than you. I am just a part of, I'm just a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I want to walk with you hand in hand on this spiritual journey, you know? And the last thing I'll say is all of these terrible things I've done sober, you know, because I am absolutely an alcoholic and I'm a solution drinker just like Liz, you know, so if I'm not getting relief in AA through a relationship with God and love and service, I'm getting relief some way, you know, is that I can do anything and stay sober, you know, I just can't be dishonest about it. As soon as I start lying about my conduct, you know, I'm pushing myself out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and, you know, I'm just really grateful to be sober. You know, I'm 27, sober 6 years old, 6 years, and, like, that blows my mind. Like, I didn't think I was going to live past 25, and if I did, it would definitely be like a homeless junkie prostitute, you know, and it doesn't have to be the path I take. Thank you for letting me share.